Our next presenter is a very modest man. He's known to most of you unless you're a guest. Leonard Liggio has been a longtime member of the Society and is currently a member of the Board of Trustees. I have a three-page resume, and he has urged me not to read it. Instead, simply say that having been president of the Institute for Humane Studies, is distinguished senior scholar, research professor of the history of international relations at George Mason University. He is a graduate of Georgetown and Fordham Universities. Leonard?
When I look at college students today, or in recent decades, I feel there is something missing. I have to admit that I join those who cannot contain their mirth when they hear some current academic statesman speak of the current crop of students as the best and the brightest. I have a hard time imagining any of the current faculty, much less students, impressing me the way my teachers did, excluding Ludwig von Mises and F.A. Hayek as too exceptional for comparison. I find no current peers of Charles C. Tansel, Tibor Karakesh, Bernard Wagner, or Heinrich Roman at Georgetown, Oscar Halecki, Ross J.S. Hoffman, Paul Levesque, Gerhard Ladner at Fordham. I do not see college or graduate students inspired by learning today as they once were, except in very rare cases. I find current education deficient compared to that of the past. We are not making progress, there is decline. I think of my father, who hardly completed elementary schooling and yet always read poetry, history, current events, magazines, six or eight newspapers a day when New York had that many newspapers. I had the extreme good fortune to be sent to elementary and secondary school taught by people educated in Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, Ireland, England. And given the current funding problems in Ireland and England, I'm surprised that no one has attempted any recruitment of these superior trained people for our secondary schools, at least the private ones. But I suppose our immigration regulations achieve on that score what the educational licensors do not in the private sphere. 65 years ago, the Chicago school system was faced with a crisis. The Chicago Teachers Association had gained control of the school administration. Test scores had declined. The school board appointed a recognized leader in education, William McAndrew. He took charge. He insisted on 100% proficiency in reading, writing, spelling, and mathematics scores. As a minimum, he viewed the scores as a minimum, that there was much more students could do beyond these mere initial standards. And he demanded that the students be taught by the teachers. The teachers' union was in an uproar. Their political allies drove McAndrew from the school system with his work not accomplished. McAndrew wished to hold the teachers to a standard of accountability. They resisted, of course. But if there is a need for accountability from teachers, the system has already failed in its recruitment. In the mid-1960s, students' high school scores had reached their highest point. Students were, from the college point of view, too well prepared because the colleges had not kept up with the high schools. The best state system in the country, California, had not kept ahead. Faculty were teaching classes of 500 or 1,000 with fresh-faced graduate students conducting the regular-sized classes on the side. There was a Berkeley student revolt against this academic substandard instruction, which was turned quickly into a political protest. There was a double response on the secondary and on the college levels. Secondary education changed its emphasis from the academic to the psychological. Students had been graduated with talent, but with worries and anxieties. High school should develop the whole personality. It should socialize the students and leave demanding education to the colleges. Meanwhile, the colleges decided that the students had been arriving too well prepared. So standards should be changed. They were too well prepared for the required college courses. It was argued, let the students skip beyond the survey courses, which in any case had been taught in a routinized fashion. Instead of making survey courses better, they scrapped the traditional courses and introduced entirely new courses that were, quote, relevant. Revolutions, Marxism, women's studies, black studies, Hispanic studies, etc. I can recall it as a faculty member of the history department at the City College of New York attending confrontations with students where a distinguished historian of Africa was denounced because he was Jewish and not Muslim, where the founder of modern women's history was denounced because he was not a woman, etc. And the colleges and universities bowed to those few students' demands and imposed on all the students the desires of a very small vocal minority. The universities discarded timeless values and imposed the guidelines of the squeaking wheel gets greased. In the mid-1970s, I taught at a suburban college located in the middle of Polo country, which decided under the presidency of a former minister that it had a mission to minorities. The suburban majority student body was ignored and expected to fit around the minority students recruited from New York City, housed with their families at the college's expense on the campus and paid a salary by the college. Also, one of the major faculty programs was recruited from former ministers and the second from West Indian Marxist graduates of the London School of Economics. At least somebody realized that there were valuable academic resources available from the British Isles. Each spring, when the computers determined that the minority students and residents had incompletes in their courses, their salary checks were canceled. And this proved America as an oppressive society. They then demonstrated. As the Polo season opened in full display in and around these students on the campus, they closed the campus to the large majority of students and faculty. Finally, I forced my car through the woods and the underbrush and arrived at the college buildings and slipped a note in the department door that I was there, where was everybody? After the students' checks were finally issued and the college reopened, the note was seen as a demonstration that I had arrived by CIA helicopter, given my non-Marxist views. I decided to leave, and the president also left to a higher calling. He became president of the Claremont Colleges. I decided that colleges would be changed only by a coherent strategy of support for good standards from outside their precincts. We have a nation in which the elementary, secondary, and college training is mediocre for almost all students. Education is not subject to the marketplace of ideas. It is controlled by self-perpetuating priesthoods. There would be nothing wrong with that if it were a private set of priesthoods. But these priesthoods are based on compulsion and attendance and in financial support. One of the most important social proposals presented in the 1988 election by President George Bush was parental choice in education through tax credits. The really important text of the Reagan and Bush administration's agenda is complete support of the educational tax credits. The president has the choice of being the education president of the New York Times and the Washington Post by issuing exhortations and dumping money on schools, or he can be the education president of the parents who elected him and before whom he must stand in November 1992, for whom educational tax credits are a crucial requirement, and who did not take the campaign slogan, "No more taxes," to mean no cuts in taxes. The president should take his lead from the January 10th White House workshop on choice in education and name former Assistant Education Secretary Patricia Hines as White House educational advisor. Having done my university studies at Jesuit universities, I've been appalled by the degree to which they, along with other private universities, have diminished their traditional approach to education and by their hiring of Marxist faculty in order to equal Harvard and Yale. Today, one does not see a strong requirement of theology or philosophy in their curriculum. Most of the most challenging courses which I took in high school and in college were religion courses. I received exposure in high school to philosophical analysis and additional history courses in the church history classes. In college, there was serious theological and historical thinking in the theology courses. Today, they are very much less required. They have been watered down, and Catholic colleges are likely to be following the direction of most of the seminaries and clergy formation centers in emphasis on religion as pastoral counseling, religion as feel good. The requirement to take 30 credits, an additional major in philosophy, may not have improved my grade point average compared to my major in history and political science, but it greatly improved my mind, my ability to think, and to think about larger questions. I was privileged to study logic and epistemology with an 88-year-old who had led the Georgetown Philodemic Society to decades of national debate championships. Even a Jesuit university today could not accommodate someone 25 years over retirement age. Standardization has impoverished this country's education. Professor Gottfried Dietzer, in the winter 1988 issue of Modern Age, has appealed to the students as a yet uncorrupted force for potential reform in the universities. They do not know how bad things are, he argues, and cannot imagine how bad they are. Dietzer continues, quote, "I should like to make a few constructive remarks that might help students, for in a large measure I agree with Bloom's comments on them. It has disturbed me, for example, that graduate students are not encouraged to expose themselves to as many professors as possible and do not seem to be interested in doing so, but instead choose to, quote, work with, unquote, one or two under whom they plan to write their dissertations. In addition, the financial spoiling of students is now complemented by the time factor. I have often asked myself why it should take students in the humanities and social sciences so much longer to get a doctorate than it takes medical students. With sufficient diligence and devotion, a student ought to be able and be made to pass the qualifying exams after 2 years and defend his or her dissertation after a year or two." Unquote. This extreme specialization in the graduate schools has meant that the teachers who come out only want to teach their very narrow specialization in the colleges, where it's totally inappropriate to have such specialized courses. And this, again, is a reason why the students find the courses so uninteresting and valueless to them. Many of these teachers have never even been exposed to bigger questions and can't therefore raise bigger questions for the students to have to be challenged by. Whether students can be a force for potential improvement is hard to say. Possibilities seem to diminish as the curriculum is despoiled year after year. It is hard to expect something better from students subjected to an even more barbarized curriculum. The gutting of the Stanford University Western Culture Program is only the most publicized example of the current rapid decline of the universities. I suppose it is a challenge to the current orthodoxy to ask, was there originally a reason to study Western culture? Why is it that Western culture is studied in the universities in many other continents of the world, including those that were not subject to Western colonialism? Has the West achieved something valuable and unique about which we can gain understanding by studying Western culture? The attack on Western culture in the curriculum is not merely an attack on our own traditions, but it is an attack on what has been accomplished due to those unique traditions. In Western wealth, science, technology, liberty, rule of law, limitation on political power, the position of women compared to all other civilizations, the regard for and nurture of children, Western society is superior to other societies. That is why Western culture is worth studying. Western society is superior, which is why all the other countries attempt to copy it, including studying Western culture. It is fine if some Americans hate their society and wish to opt out of it. But is it fine to turn our institutions of higher education over to such people? I say it isn't fine, but a lot of good that's going to do. Just as Western society has been the most successful society in general, American society has been the most successful of the successful. In addition to Western culture courses, there should be American culture courses. And American culture courses, of course, would include the works of American, Black, Hispanic, and Asian cultural leaders. Black, Hispanic, and Asian American writers have to be a part of a scholarly course in American culture. Black, Hispanic, and Asian American students have been and are part of Western and American culture. Neither is a racial-based culture. Both are and have been open to people of all races. To answer the question whether the decline in academia is reversible, one needs to ask who has the responsibility and power to reverse it. The legal owners of the universities are the trustees. Trustees are mainly businessmen and businesswomen. Business people are the owners of the universities and can decide in which direction they should go. I have known businessmen who were trustees of universities and who had a good sense of the direction toward which the university should move. Pierre Goodrich of Indianapolis was one such businessman. There were a number of others of his generation. Pierre Goodrich and other businessmen thought that knowledge, culture, and ideas were very important. Such people themselves could have formed the best faculty I could imagine. I participated in seminars with them and learned a lot from them. But is the contemporary business leader capable of providing the educational leadership to the universities that he owns? I fear we have suffered another decline. The sources of the university trustees are the same corporate executives who have arisen under a more impoverished educational system. Today, the corporate executive is really interested in knowledge or in education. Those who are generally find their inspiration in the Aspen Institute, not in the Philadelphia Society. If there is rot in American higher education, the rot began and continues among the trustees. If their educations had prepared them for the leadership roles in society, the universities would not be in the sorry states they are in. Perhaps those remaining educated business leaders can educate their colleagues and restore learning in the universities. Thomas Molnar in the winter 1988 issue of Modern Age provides one analysis of the situation in the universities. He details the recent fads in education, quote, Let's catch up with Sputnik in the 50s, or let's learn Swahili in the 60s, or let's make revolution in the 70s, or let's be competent in computer sciences in the 80s. American education is a subclass of other interests, business, politics, world improvement, or simply one of getting a job. He continues, my students at Yale, most of them very intelligent, simply admit, why should we study? We come from rich and influential families. Our careers in law, politics, or government are guaranteed. We shall be ambassadors, business lawyers, high officials. Why bother, unquote. These are the people who will become the trustees of universities in the future. Business leaders have a major role in the direction of two institutions, American universities and the United States Congress. In the last quarter century, we have seen the consequences. Our society is poorly educated, overregulated, and overtaxed. Having created their own fetters, businessmen wonder why America cannot compete in the world. Since business leaders prefer to fund the groups and the congressmen who are against their own material interests, and this is well documented in recent studies of the Capital Research Center, why should we expect anything better in the realm of higher education? Thank you.